Thanks, Trace. We've got a fair bit of stuff to go through here, so I'll move through pretty quickly and hopefully leave some good time at the end for Q&A. I think before we get into any sort of discussions around portfolio construction, about the characteristics of the sector, it's important to really define what it is. I know this is a pretty basic concept for many of you, but for others, there's been, and particularly from some of the funds that have been put up, there's a very broad range of definitions. Some people are including construction companies or shipping companies or BHP, resource companies, as an infrastructure play. We think it's very important to understand why we're getting into this asset class and what sort of characteristics we're searching for. Our definition is really getting back to those essential services, the monopoly characteristics that can be provided. So certainly the transport infrastructure space is very interesting at the moment, given where the relative value is, roads, airports, ports and rail. You can clearly get some defensive characteristics from some of the more regulated utilities. And a couple of the areas that are differentiated for us, which we find really interesting, some energy pipelines and storage assets have a lot of the characteristics we're looking for and have been great performers for us over the last couple of years. And some communication assets, so broadcast towers or satellites where you have a contract in place and limited competition. With that background, what sort of characteristics can we expect from these various sectors? I think the first thing we're looking for is a stable income stream. I guess there's a lot of income funds out there at the moment and some question marks over whether an income fund that's predominantly including financial stocks can actually maintain that dividend this year and next year. I think we're pleased with the fact that many of the infrastructure companies, certainly the ones outside of Australia, have actually delivered on their dividend commitment and continue to in fact grow that dividend. Companies like National Grid, the monopoly provider of electricity and gas transmission in the UK, year in, year out, 8% dividend growth is certainly the foundation of what we're trying to deliver in terms of protecting that income stream. We've seen some pretty sensible regulation, particularly in the US, where the regulator, despite what risk-free rates have done, has continued to provide 10, 11, 12% return on equity to these regulated utilities, providing that stability. I personally think inflation's going to become a big issue over a 3 or 5 year view. Okay, there's certainly talk about deflation this year, and there's certainly enough capacity in the economy to support that view in the short term. But ultimately, we're running short of resources, and I do think inflationary will be a story that will re-emerge. What we're looking to do is invest in assets that provide a unique inflation hedge. Again, because they're contracted or they have a concession agreement that automatically passes through inflation each year, like a French motorway network here, it provides us that certainty over the long term that one of the key risks for a long-term liability is covered off. I think ultimately one of the differentiating things about infrastructure versus, say, a REIT or another income product is its ability to grow. And we can't forget that. I don't want to fill a portfolio with utility stocks just because they're really defensive. At the end of the day, we need to grow our capital over time. And these assets, toll roads, airports, ports, are really what makes this sector unique, is its ability to grow organically over time. And often, post an investment in a runway or a terminal, not have to spend a lot of money for a long period of time, developing some real free cash flow. And we've seen this, one of the great things about infrastructure is, while it's a relatively new asset class, the assets have been around for a long time. So we can see how the New Jersey Turnpike or the Port of Rotterdam or Australian Airport, International Airport passengers behaved during recessions, during shocks. And frankly, the performance we've seen out of many of the assets is pretty consistent with, in the last few years, is consistent with what we saw during the recessions in the 70s and the 80s and the shocks of, you know, September 11 SARS. But, you know, what we've seen is a capacity to return to growth, you know, soon after those events and generally get back to towards a trend level of underlying growth. And importantly, above GDP growth, 6%, 8%, 7%, better than the nominal economic growth coming through from these assets. You know, we have not set up a thematic fund. And what I mean by that is, to me, themes come out of bottom-up stock stories. They're not a driver of our investment decisions. But I think what's important is what can come out of the stocks that, that we can invest in this sector. I do think investors are conscious of the environmental issues, climate change issues, globalization issues, and investing in ports, in oil storage, in some renewable assets where there's a contract or a natural hedge in place. You know, provide investors with some comfort that they're actually contributing to what themes are playing out in the next decade. With those background on characteristics, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the listed infrastructure sector itself. You know, how has the universe grown over the last 10, 15 years? It's fair to say that back in the early 90s, it was a pretty concentrated universe of boring utilities, let's be honest. But what we've seen over the last particularly 10 or 15, the last 10 years, is a real diversity coming through in the types of assets on offer and the geographic location of those assets. I'll give you an example. You know, France didn't exist pretty much as an infrastructure market some 7 years ago. But through the privatizations of Electricity de France, Gaz de France, Airports de Paris, you know, three toll road networks, a satellite business, Eurotunnel, you know, you've created a sort of 50 billion euro investable universe and a diversity of stocks. We think that trend will keep coming. There's no doubt while IPOs have been put on hold in the last year, what we are seeing around the world is governments putting themselves in more and more debt. The ultimate outcome of that will be the privatisation of infrastructure and other assets. Yes, that's a 3 or 5 year story, but it certainly still exists. Yeah, how have the returns been over the last 15 years? And sorry if this is a bit hard to read up the back, but what we've done is just broken out the MSCI World sectors and you know, some markets like MSCI Emerging Markets, to give you a sense of where the risk-adjusted returns of infrastructure have been. And I think, you know, through bull markets, through the last couple of years of bear markets, delivered, you know, a pretty good 8% total return, you know, through that period. And, you know, importantly, delivered that with a relatively low level of risk, you know, in line with consumer staples or healthcare stocks, you know, kept the risk levels low. You know, we've had some exciting stories in emerging markets in the tech sector over the last decade. But ultimately, they've delivered, you know, returns a little below, but with twice the risk. We certainly think in a portfolio, infrastructure has a place. Let's take that a step further and talk about how infrastructure has performed in various market conditions. So what this slide is saying is, if you look at the MSCI World, in a month where the MSCI World goes up, it typically goes up by about 3%. In that same month, infrastructure has typically gone up a bit more than 2%. So in an upmarket, infrastructure delivering about 70% of the upside versus a global equities portfolio. What's important is in down markets, in a month where the MSCI world goes down, it typically drops about 4%, and in that same month, infrastructure has dropped about 2% over the last 15 years. 70% of the upside, 50% of the downside, I think is a pretty good risk-adjusted return, and that's come out in the previous slide. You know, we think the excess returns in this sector can be sustained. Let's think about a few factors that can drive excess returns versus a global equities portfolio. I mean, I guess your first thing is your base, your yield. The yield, 4 to 5%, certainly versus a risk-free rate and some other, I guess, equity income products, you know, that's a decent start. We think the inflation protection story is important, and where other sectors will be struggling to pass through inflationary pressures, higher input costs, maybe oil, fuel costs, this sector's ability to pass through those risks and demonstrate pricing power, I think, will be important. We need the asset class to grow. You know, we've seen privatisations, for example, have been a very successful way to create value. And that's because these are assets that were held by very inefficient government organisations, not just in an operating sense, but also in a capital structure sense. So we hope that those privatisations do come back, and we believe they will in the years to come. And we're certainly seeing, you know, whether it be through the fiscal stimulus programs being announced, an electricity network doing a new, spending $800 million, improving the efficiency of its network through reducing load losses and smart metering initiatives. There's a lot of growth opportunities coming through that we hadn't expected because of this economic crisis. You know, what risks do we need to be aware of? Clearly, the biggest risk for an infrastructure asset is regulation. Clearly, these are monopoly assets. Any, you know, significant social unrest, any significant political interference is going to damage the returns from these assets. We've been very cautious on emerging markets. Our current exposure on an underlying basis is about 6% of the fund in emerging markets. We think while it offers a pretty interesting return opportunity, the risks in emerging markets are far greater than where you have an established regulatory and political system. Credit. I mean, Australia has been the conspirator and the victim of the credit crisis as it has come to infrastructure. You know, Australian infrastructure has been the worst performing market in the world, and that's because, you know, of the excessive leverage that, you know, Macquarie's and Babcock's and others have put in place. Again, great defensive assets that perform well, but the defensiveness of those assets was changed by the capital structure. The equity raisings that are occurring at the moment are important to get the sector back on a level. Steady footing. And we can't ignore environment, not because we feel good thinking about environment or we've committed to the UNPRI, but because we do think companies in the infrastructure space that don't address environmental issues, coal-fired power stations, you know, aircraft noise, for example, those companies will be penalised not only in their earnings but in the multiple applied to those businesses. For us, it's a return outcome that's important. You know, I introduced this point at the beginning, but this just puts some data behind it. The infrastructure universe is sort of a broad term for a whole lot of different sectors, and you need to be aware of that. We think it's dangerous to go passively into this space. It's a sector that's still very much evolving, The definitions are still coming in on what is infrastructure. We think certainly at the moment it's a place for active managers. Here is an example of the relative risk return. You know, we talked about the infrastructure portfolio as a whole being up in this area, but you know, within that you've had, you know, very good risk, very good returns out of communications and roads and water to a degree, but with reasonably higher risk. Airports and ports and rail have had a difficult time. There's no doubt we've been through unprecedented shocks in terms of September 11 and SARS and these types of things. You know, returns not so good over a 15-year view. I think they're pretty interesting now, and we're positioned here now. But you need to be aware of the risks. Again, you know, boring regulated utilities have done their job, but we don't want to sit our whole portfolio in them over 15 years, otherwise you will underperform. So I think there's lots of opportunities for a skilled manager to position in various sectors at points in time. Again, as we did previously, splitting it into up and down markets. And this is important. Yes, in down markets, you have to be positioned in very defensive, boring, regulated utilities. But it's important in up markets to take advantage of some of the growth opportunities we see in communications, ports and roads. Again, the active management can come through if you're prepared to shift some of your portfolio into those opportunities. A lot of background there over the last 15 years. How's the sector gone in the last 2 years? I think we do need some context here. We've been through a pretty extraordinary economic period, unprecedented fall since World War II in you know, port and airport volumes. You know, some 20-30% fall in container volumes. You know, rail car loads. You know, even on the utility side, we've seen industrial electricity usage down some 20-30% in some countries. It's important to have that background before we look at the performance of the sector. If we look at the outcomes over calendar 08 and now into the first 6 months of 2009, ports, airports, we're not defensive versus the MSCI world because of those unprecedented volume declines I talked about on the previous slide. Roads, the problem here was you had too much leverage, and Australia's been a classic example of that. But across many other sectors, the integrated utilities, some of the rail stocks, Japan, for example, you know, showed good defensive behaviour. Importantly, for an active manager, your ability to switch at the beginning of this year into transport infrastructure, into some of these positions that were, you know, oversold, airports trading below 1x book value. So an airport that cannot be replicated and a replacement cost probably at 2x book value, trading below book value. It's a significant opportunity in time. And we've seen movements of 20, 30, 40% since February in those sectors. You know, we're certainly in an interesting period and one that we took advantage of. I guess with that background, you know, this is about portfolio construction. What sort of portfolio would we recommend? And this is a portfolio that I think, you know, works through the cycle. Right now, we've probably got more, we do have more exposure to roads and airports and ports than this would indicate. That's where the opportunity is today. But broadly speaking, we look for about half the portfolio in a defensive income generating side to make sure that we do hold up versus a global equity portfolio. But importantly, over the long term, tapping into the growth opportunity in toll roads and airports and ports has been important. This gives you an indication. I wish I had a 20-year track record. We don't. We have 2.5 years. But to give you an indication of how our strategy might have played out over the history, again, sorry, this is a bit small for up the back, but basically the MSCI world would have struggled to keep up with a CPI plus 5 benchmark. It's been a tough time. If we just take the green line is the UBS Global Infrastructure Utilities Index. So it's the typical passive benchmark, very similar to the Macquarie Index. It's actually 90% utilities. So do you know what you're getting into when you're buying an index fund? Look, it's done pretty well. Through most periods of time, it would have kept up with a CPI plus 5 benchmark. But importantly, being in this portfolio mix, which takes 90% utilities and reweights it typically to 50% on the growth side, you get a much better return, 11-12% return versus 9% for the passive and 5% for the MSCI world. It's a strategy that's worked over the last 15 years. It's worked for us in the last 2 years, and it's one that we will continue to pursue. There's some background on Colonial First State. I think what we've tried to do is really focus on the quality assets. As I said, not getting involved in construction and higher risk opportunities. Delivering, not only an inflation-protected income stream, but making sure we grow over time. You don't want to be too defensive; you're going to be left behind over the long term. A pretty pragmatic approach. We think there's no point going into an equities market, in my view, particularly an infrastructure one that's still evolving, and not taking advantage of the mispricing that takes place. And that's certainly been true in the last 2 years. There's been a lot of opportunities to pick up on mispricing. And I guess, we talk about ourselves as a boutique within a large organisation. It's been helpful to have the backing of CBA in the last couple of years, and it's allowed us to continue to invest in people and in systems to make sure that all I have to worry about is performance. There's a process slide there. I'm not going to go through it, but I think the important thing is how our process differentiates to many of our competitors is a recognition that we can't just produce an unlisted set of assets in the listed market. The listed market brings with it volatility, it brings with it unique risks, and having a qualitative ranking that goes through, things you can't capture in a discounted cash flow valuation is important. Leverage, governance, equity flows in a stock, representation on the board and its independence. These are things that have driven infrastructure stocks, particularly in Australia, above and beyond the asset performance. And some performance numbers there for you. That's all I wanted to talk about today, and I believe we're handing over to Kevin.
Briefly, my task is to try and hit on the key takeouts. But firstly, what really struck me was, it's fairly ironic even within this program, is that infrastructure has been lumped in with property. So really what we've been trying to do for some years, I've been trying to do it for ages, even convincing my colleagues at work to include the word infrastructure whenever they talk about the property department, everybody drops the infrastructure bit off. So it seems to happen here. So you've got to keep pushing for infrastructure to be recognised as a separate asset class, if that's what we wish. Basically, you could really get an exposure to infrastructure via equities. equities is its own asset class. So don't be put off, but you can still get exposure either in a listed situation or an unlisted situation. The other thing is that super funds now, who I'm speaking to, are starting to think about the classification. They used to dump it into alternatives. So, okay, here's an afterthought. Let's throw infrastructure into that little basket. But now they're trying to look at, well, what are defensive assets? Or what are growth assets? Or growth alternative assets? So they're starting to make a place for it, let's say. So by redefining the way they look at things. That was the first issue. Secondly, back onto what Peter was saying about infrastructure, I think for me as well, it's identifying the infrastructure assets. Make sure when you're investing in something, you know what you're investing in. Go down to the next level. Sure, you can invest in a manager, but have a look at the portfolio. See what they've invested in and make sure you're getting the characteristics that you want. Because again, some managers might be dumping in stuff that you really aren't interested in or you consider high risk. There's lots of things to talk about there, but Peter identified all the characteristics that you should be looking at. And lastly, really, again, understanding the risks. That's very important. It's their job, obviously, to look at the listed markets or unlisted markets as managers and identify the risks. For me, things like the regulation are extremely important. You know, looking at the detail as to how the business works. Obviously, the debt. In the last few years, we've been examining some of the blow-up situations. Sure, these assets can lend themselves to being, you know, conducive to having higher debt because of the cash flows to cover them. But again, be careful of some sort of financial engineering. Paying out more than the cash flow. Those sorts of things, they are obvious problem areas, and I've seen them a few times. And even so, infrastructure assets aren't completely immune from the economy. Obviously, things do soften from time to time, even road assets, even airports, do succumb to shocks occasionally. I think lastly, the management process is governance. This comes back to any investment. Who's running the show and how do they go about it? If you can trust the people and they go about it in the proper ways, I think that goes a long way to being a good investment. So lastly, my job's to ask a query. Hopefully it's a bit of a curly one, but you know, again, I've been observing some of the problems in the sector as well. So you know, the Babcock and Browns of this world, Walco to some extent, Bridge Connection, yeah, even Macquarie Infrastructure. A lot of these are listed groups, so does being listed really diminish those attractive characteristics of stable and predictable income?
I think that there's no doubt you have to be aware when you go into a listed product that you will be exposed to short-term volatility. I think many of our clients have taken the view, and increasingly some of the asset consultants and the pension funds, that look, ultimately on a 5 or 10 year view, your return outcome is going to be the same. Right now your return outcome will probably be better in listed than unlisted as a result of that volatility. But I think, you know, the more important thing we've highlighted in the last 2 years is really stepping down from asset performance to stock performance. And there's many layers of issues that we need to be aware of. And certainly that's why, you know, our process, you know, half the process, if you like, the valuation ranking is about the asset, you know, a somewhat academic approach to a fundamental valuation for a business. But the other side, the quality ranking, is about digging deeper and saying, well, that's interesting, the assets have done what they said they'd do, but why has the stock been a disaster in Australia? Well, perhaps it's because the board has 6 members from Macquarie Bank and 2 independents from a Bermudan holding company. You know, maybe it's because, you know, the leverage is 90% debt to enterprise value. Yes, it's locked in for 15 years, but it's still a headline issue for investors. you know, on the social side, you know, I guess ESG is sort of a term thrown around a lot at the moment, but there's some real issues. You know, we can look at utilities. The utilities that are on the top of the customer surveys typically win market share and win customers. And you know, something like Scottish and Southern Energy in the UK has been an outperformer. The stock has been an outperformer because it's had good customer service. So, we've spent a lot of time trying to get beyond the asset to avoid the disasters. I guess at the same time, you know, markets are going to do what they're going to do. And I guess that's our job, is to say, you know, we disagree with the market. The stock's overreacted. This is our chance to pick up a good quality airport, after SARS, or a port after a bad headline figure from China exports. Volatility can be your friend if you're prepared to back your views. The Australian fund is fully hedged to currency, so it's a 3-month rolling hedge to take out a lot of the volatility in currency. Obviously, at a stock level, we have to think about translation of earnings for currency, but having that hedge in there, I guess helps us avoid making short-term investment decisions based on movements in currency. Yeah.
Does it raise the time
when
the credit crisis might be the water to a certain extent between the low and high gearing?
Yes.
If credit markets are operating in a normal way, what is the reasonable
level? Yeah, okay. I wish I had another slide here, but the way I look at leverage is an interest cover ratio, because I think sometimes debt to enterprise value, for example, or a typical gearing measure, is circular. You know, what was the gearing of Centro before it blew up was 40%. You know, afterwards it was 90. Looking at interest cover, you get a much clearer view of the cash situation. We typically look for, I think the most efficient interest cover ratio for an average infrastructure asset is 2 to 3 times interest cover. Okay, now, Australian infrastructure stocks at the moment are taking away the river cities and BrisConnects and those, but the main ones are sort of 1.5 to 1.8 times interest cover, so too highly geared. Whereas the average for our universe, so the other 95% of our universe, is about 3.2 times interest cover. So I would actually say our universe is perhaps a little too conservative at the moment, but that obviously reflects what we've just been through. So companies that were doing share buybacks have stopped that for a period. Some of them have just started putting it back on to sort of re-gear their balance sheets. And I think that's an important point on listed infrastructure outside Australia versus unlisted infrastructure. The gearing ratios are much more compelling in the listed space. So if you're into an unlisted fund, a lot of those transactions have been dealt with 50, 60, 80% gearing, or 1.5, 2 times interest cover, whereas you're getting 3 times interest cover in the listed market. Yes. Yeah. Okay. A couple of answers to that. I think not all the assets in Australia are good. I think, generally speaking, the Babcock and Brown assets were low quality. Some of the toll roads, not listed, but Langcove Tunnel, cross-city tunnel are going to take a series of restructurings to get back to sustainable levels. One that we've stepped up on recently is Connect East. It's had a very difficult time. It's now in its third equity raising, and it now has a balance sheet going forward that is sustainable. Is it a high quality asset? Absolutely. There's no doubt that asset, East Link, will deliver over the next 15 years performance similar to the M7 in Sydney or Hills Motorway M2 over the last 15 years. It's a good asset. But it needed a series of restructurings to get back to a sustainable basis. So, from this level, I guess having fallen from $1.50 to 33 cents, yes, it's very interesting now. So we've had 2.5% of our fund in Australia over the last 2 years, somewhere in that range. I think Connect East is interesting. I think the new MIG, the good MIG, is going to be interesting, which has just got 407 and APRR and Westlink in there. And I think Transurban under new management is a good quality company. I just wish it was a little bit cheaper. So they're ones we're looking at the moment. I think Duet's structure is too complicated for me, and I think the US rate case will disappoint. We don't look at toll. I don't think it's infrastructure. Asciano, port assets are good, but face some upcoming competition. The rail assets are more cyclical. We struggle with a bit. So, my core issue with Asciano is the management. I don't know if we can trust them. So we need to see some more independence and some quality in that management team to change our view.
Yeah, can I ask something?
Yeah. Yes. I think they can be a sensible investment, but they're separate from what we're trying to do. So I can see a role for an emerging markets infrastructure fund, provided that you understand that it's much higher risk, and hopefully you get the returns to compensate you for that. I think you do need to be very careful of the country and political influence on these assets. China is a market that we actually spend quite a bit of time looking at, and provided that the return was excellent, we would invest there. The transparency has improved, the governance is trying to improve, and the regulation has been relatively stable. If I look at some markets though in Southeast Asia, Latin America, there's too much of a history of governments reneging on contracts, of forcibly, reducing prices to help stimulate the economy. They're markets that we definitely screened out. And even if we're running a high risk gem fund, we'd still screen them out. So we'd be happy to do that, but I think it is a very different risk return equation to what we're trying to offer. It varies. On the transport infrastructure side, I'd say the yield is lower. So typically, the ports, airports, roads in emerging markets don't pay yield because it's a growth story. But I think the utilities, can offer some interesting yields. Obviously, there's a question mark on the sustainability of those dividends when a regulatory decision comes around. But I think the yield would be probably a touch below. But to be honest, I haven't looked in that much detail. Not really. I guess we always sort of tried to use as longer term data as we could when we formed a view. We certainly didn't pitch ourselves an absolute return fund, given we're a listed equity. But I think, you know, it's fair to say the last 15 years before these last 2 years, you know, the returns were like 10%. You know, now they're 8%. So, you know, is 8 or 10 the right answer for the next 10 years, or is it 12? I don't know. But I think, you know, from a bottom-up perspective, our views haven't changed. I think, you know, the volume outcomes are typically in line with trend. Obviously, we need to see them return to trend, but on some assets, that's already happened. Pricing is, you know, structured, so we know what that will be. I think debt margins will stabilise. I think what we've actually seen across many of our companies is we've had to upgrade earnings because the cost of debt is lower than we'd expected. Odd, but obviously because risk-free rates have gone to 1, 2, 3%, yeah, the margin's blown out, but the risk-free is so low, you actually end up a percent lower on your overall cost of debt. I mean, I think as risk-free rates come up, margins will come down and you'll be back where you started. Will we see 50 basis points, 90% geared offered on a toll road asset again? No. But we weren't extrapolating that at the time. Yeah, I think if you look at our quality ranking, the areas that we have, I like to say, strengthened is the governance side. You know, what have I learnt from some of the Australian stocks, for example, is, you know, the board structure was really the core issue. And I think we're spending a lot more attention on the quality of the board, on the independence of the board, and on really the operating expertise of the executive management team rather than, you know, their banking experience. So I think we're definitely spending more time looking at governance than we were. I think on leverage, we don't want to overreact to leverage. I mean, we've been through a financial crisis. Leverage is not black and white a bad thing. Appropriate leverage is good. But I think what we've learned is that you can do all the analysis on, you know, the swaps in place and, you know, how many years till the next refinancing. But at the end of the day, if you have a headline level of gearing that is perceived by the market to be too high, you'll get penalised. So sometimes you have to be a little less academic and take a headline approach to some of those issues. Yeah, there's certainly a risk. We've seen in some areas, you know, French electricity prices, you know, they've been unable to increase prices while their input costs were going up. Now, input costs have sort of fallen since then and it's taken some of the margin pressure away. But yeah, it's difficult to raise prices when the government owns 70% of your stock. So we're certainly conscious of government ownership of listed stocks. In the UK, we've taken a pretty simple approach. You know, 1 year in five, you don't own UK water utilities, and that's when there's a draft decision. And it was the same this year as the 5 years before that, five times before that. Is, you know, in a draft decision, regulators, with their primary aim of looking after consumers, are incentivized to provide a headline impact on stocks. So they'll need to restructure. So, yeah, we're conscious of that, but sticking to developed markets removes a lot of that risk.